bomb scare spreads across the United States.
That device, very similar to the other devices that have been located in the last 48 hours. And it all appears to be from the same sender.
It's Friday, October 26th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead this half hour, tensions rise again between China and Taiwan. Saudi's crown prince speaks about the Khashoggi murder and fashion with a purpose. It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. Authorities continue to retrieve more bombs sent to prominent Democrats and their supporters. Suspected mail bombs so far have been sent to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, President Barack Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, Attorney General Eric Holder, as well as sitting Congresswoman Maxine Waters and Democratic supporters George Soros and Robert De Niro, among others. U.S. President Donald Trump is largely blaming the media for an angry political atmosphere in America.
There is one way to settle our disagreements. It's called peacefully at the ballot box. That's what we want. That's what we want. As part of a larger national effort to bridge our divides and bring people together, the media also has a responsibility to set a civil tone and to stop the endless hostility and constant negative and oftentimes false attacks and stories. Have to do it. They've got to stop.
In his Twitter feed Thursday, the president suggested the media was a big part of anger in the United States today. He said it was hateful beyond description and called on the mainstream media to, quote, clean up its act fast. VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman spoke with VOA's Sarah Williams about Mr. Trump's latest tweet on the media.
The president had mentioned the news media in his rally last evening in Wisconsin, where he called for unity and people to watch their language. But today he's back to the Donald Trump that's very familiar on Twitter and lashing out at the media, referring to it again as fake news and saying it's gotten so bad and hateful that it is beyond description, and calling for the mainstream media to clean up its act fast. And, of course, as you might imagine, some of the mainstream media, some of the reporters, basically tossing this back towards the president, saying they're reporting objectively on the things that he's doing and saying. And if there's anybody who's most responsible for this angry political atmosphere we have in the country right now, it is the president of the United States.
He seems to have particularly clashed with CNN, also he also often mentions the New York Times. But CNN, the New York Bureau of CNN, was one of those places targeted with these devices yesterday.
Right. I would note, however, that recently when he has sparred directly with correspondents from CNN and the New York Times, he has both criticized them and then praised some of their reporting. So it depends on a day-to-day basis of where he's at on that. And I should mention that he continues to take questions from both CNN and the New York Times regularly, even giving the New York Times correspondents here at the White House a recent interview in the Oval Office.
Actually, I have heard that one editor was saying that he actually speaks to the press more than former President Barack Obama did.
Oh, he's extremely available, not in the way that we had seen in previous administrations where you would have these formal news conferences, but he takes questions during the so-called pool sprays when a group of photographers, videographers, and journalists, including broadcasters, come in a small group to usually watch the president sign something. President Obama did not speak during those. Going out to the South Lawn to board Marine One, again, President Obama and other presidents would rarely stop to answer questions, but more often than not, President Trump stops. And I've also thrown questions at him, besides in the Oval Office, also on airport tarmacs when he'll come over and speak to a small group of us. So in that way, he is extremely available and responsive to the White House press.
Well, meanwhile, there's continuing investigation into this almost across the nation, the discovery of these various devices all along the East Coast and as well as Congresswoman Maxine Waters' office out in California.
Right. I think at this hour we're up to 10 separate suspected devices that have been found, sent to Hillary Clinton, who, of course, ran against President Trump, former President Barack Obama, who was Trump's predecessor. And according to the FBI, now two devices or suspected devices in packages that were sent to former Vice President Joe Biden.
VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Former Malaysian Prime Minister Najib Razak and his ex-Treasury chief were jointly charged Thursday with criminal breach of trust involving $1.6 billion. Pakistan has freed Mullah Abdul Ghani Baradar, co-founder of the Taliban. Chinese spies often eavesdrop on President Donald Trump when he uses his unsecure cell phone to gossip with old friends, according to the New York Times. And Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan vowed to hold peace talks with arch-rival India following elections in that neighboring country. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com. And VOA Asia continues. China's defense ministry Thursday said it found the meeting last week between Defense Minister Wei Fenghe and U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis in Singapore constructive. In those talks, Mattis called for deepening bilateral contacts to ease tensions and avoid inadvertent conflict. However, at a security meeting in Beijing, Wei denounced recent remarks by Vice President Mike Pence, who charged China with interfering in America's electoral process. Wei said trying to separate China from Taiwan will be met with resolute military action, and China will pay any price that has to be paid. He also maintained that the islands of the South China Sea have long been Chinese territory, and defense facilities there are a matter of self-defense, not militarization. At the Warsaw Security Forum this week, Wednesday, retired U.S. Lieutenant General Ben Hodges raised eyebrows by predicting conflict with China as a very strong likelihood, but not inevitable. Hodges cited a recent near miss between an American and Chinese warship in the South China Sea, trade tensions, intellectual property theft, and China's expansive infrastructure spending. Brad Glosserman, a visiting professor at the Tokyo-based Tama University Center for Rulemaking Strategy, told VOA's Victor Beatty this was a message aimed primarily at Europe.
He's really trying to prod them to do more in their own defense and just remind them that U.S. has eyes on a number of theaters and that it's probably, and perhaps rightfully, more concerned about the potential for conflict in the Pacific. And if you spend any time in Europe, as I have several times this year, China is a very, very distant place and distant challenge, not even threat yet. So I think that's probably the most important way to start. You know, it presumes that China continues on the trajectory that it's on and that given the sense of conflict that's coming, that we don't do anything about changing that, about changing Chinese behavior and about building ways to dampen potential sources of conflict. What this is this notion of this Thucydides trap, right? This idea that rising powers invariably trigger conflict with established status quo powers. And I'm extremely skeptical of that. And again, mostly because I just don't believe that in over a 15-year time period, we can't get in front of this problem, even though the general is right to note that accidents do happen.
We do have a more, what's being described often in news reports, assertive China, particularly in the South China Sea. You had that incident of a near miss between two warships, one American and one Chinese, just a couple of weeks ago.
Right. And like I said, accidents do happen. We've begun conversations with the Chinese about coming up with codes of conduct and ways for military vessels and militaries to interact in areas like this. Yeah, and we've had accidents like this before. If you go back to 2001 when our two planes collided in the South China Sea as well. So this is not unusual. And sometimes what you need is a sobering incident, precisely like the one that occurred a few weeks ago, to remind everyone of the stakes involved. And I think that for all of the shortcomings of the Chinese leadership, I think they understand that a war is certainly not in their interest. And the Chinese are maybe expansionist in design, but certainly not reckless in practice.
Is the South China Sea the likely point of conflict, or could you see it elsewhere?
That's where you have the greatest potential and the highest amount of friction. But one could easily see just as well something erupting in the East China Sea, where the Chinese and the Japanese have a conflict over the Senkaku Islands. Or, in fact, you could see it on the Korean Peninsula as well, where the rapprochement between the United States and North Korea and North Korea and South Korea could easily go off the rails. The South China Sea could well be the most likely, but I wouldn't underestimate the potential for something in the East China Sea, too. And, of course, Taiwan.
Brad Glosserman of Tama University speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. Happening now in Asia, stocks in Asia stumbled Thursday following a plunge on Wall Street overnight. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index fell 1.63% in afternoon trade. The Shanghai Composite, meanwhile, erased earlier losses of more than 2.5% to close fractionally higher at 2,603.8. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has described the killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi as a heinous crime in his first public comments since the journalist's death and disappearance from the Saudi consulate in Turkey. Saudi Arabia recently admitted that Khashoggi was killed October 2nd in its Istanbul consulate. 18 people were arrested in connection with the case, including an official close to bin Salman. The Crown Prince spoke about the case for the first time on Wednesday. VOA's Zlatica Hoc has more.
Saudi officials have shown a united front at the International Investors Conference in Riyadh, which is being boycotted by a number of Western banks, companies, and media outlets in the wake of Khashoggi's death. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin has canceled attendance at the conference, but he met quietly with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman on Monday. The prince addressed the killing publicly on Wednesday.
First of all, the crime was really painful to all Saudis. And I believe it is painful to every human in the world. It is a heinous crime that cannot be justified.
The Crown Prince also said the attempts to use this painful event to drive a wedge in Saudi-Turkish relations will not succeed.
This wedge will not happen, and we will prove to the world that the two governments are cooperating to see that all perpetrators are taken to court and justice will be seen at the end.
The U.S. administration has revoked U.S. visas for Saudi agents implicated in the case, but it has not canceled any business deals with the kingdom, arms sales being the most lucrative of them. British Prime Minister Theresa May was criticized in Parliament Wednesday for not revoking arms sales to Saudi Arabia.
What more evidence of criminality does the Prime Minister need before she fully commits to ending the sales of arms to the brutal regime in Saudi Arabia?
Saudi Arabia needs arms for its intervention in Yemen, where it is helping the government fight Iran-backed Houthi rebels. The violence has had an enormous toll on Yemeni civilians, but it is only after Khashoggi's death that there has been a global demand to stop arms sales to the Saudis, says a Belgium-based international arms sales expert.
But it's hard to say if that will be some kind of the tipping point for some kind of a global initiative on prohibiting arms exports to Saudi Arabia, because several countries still have important geopolitical and economic reasons to not stop arms exports to Saudi Arabia.
President Trump has argued that arms sales to Saudi Arabia support the creation of thousands of new jobs for Americans and that the kingdom is an important U.S. ally against Iran. Zlatica Hoc, VOA News, Washington.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Going against a growing tide of legal reforms sweeping across the region, Malaysia's Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad said Asia does not need to copy the West in accepting lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender citizens. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Tens of thousands of NATO alliance troops are springing to action Thursday at the start of the alliance's Trident Juncture exercise. It's the largest exercise since the end of the Cold War. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb brings us the latest on this massive event in and around Norway and why Russia is watching.
A display of power with a size not seen since the end of the Cold War. The main phase of NATO's Trident Juncture is on, and it's a warning not to mess with the alliance.
Very simple message. We are ready and we're capable to meet any possible security threat coming to the NATO borders. That's the only reason why we do it.
The massive drills involve about 50,000 personnel, 65 ships, 250 aircraft, and 10,000 vehicles. NATO says the exercise is not an act of aggression, and the alliance has invited Russia to observe.
I'm happy that we have observers because they're going to see that we're very good at what we do, and that will have a deterrent effect on anybody who might want to cross those borders, but one nation in particular.
The exercise comes as Russia and the West are still bitterly divided over Russia's illegal annexation of Ukraine's Crimea Peninsula, with some NATO countries worried Moscow may try to encroach on their sovereign land. It also comes as U.S. President Donald Trump has slammed NATO for benefiting Europe more than the United States. NATO has withstood decades through good times and bad, and alliance leaders say they are committed to sticking together.
For a long, long time, over 70 years, but I say it was never probably as active and as determined as it is right now at this point in time.
The Trident Juncture drills are expected to run through November 7th. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Typhoon Yutu is on its way to Southeast Asia after devastating part of the U.S. Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands. Many homes have been destroyed, says the mayor of Tinian, an island in the U.S. Pacific Territory. All the big stories coming your way through the day on VOA. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a young man in Minneapolis, Minnesota, has set out to do something about the global refugee crisis, even if it only has a modest impact. He started a fashion company while in college, selling accessories with a special connection to refugees. In this report, narrated by Molly McKitterick, VOA's June So introduces us to the young entrepreneur.
Perhaps nothing reminds people of the global refugee crisis better than these images taken on a beach in Greece. These jackets, thousands of them, were worn by refugees as they desperately crossed the Mediterranean Sea by boat. The stunning image moved Mohamed Malim, a business major. He started a fashion company last December, and his first product is a bracelet.
This bracelet is made out of recycled life jacket refugees have worn on their journey to safety in Greece. As you can see, the outside is the orange life jacket, and the inside is actually a leather embedded our company's name and our slogan, Building Humanity.
For Malim, now graduated from college, fashion is a tool to tell a story.
Everyone uses fashion in a way where they basically portray themselves, you know, they tell a story, and I wanted to tell a story, you know, through my fashion lenses.
He named his company Epimonia, a Greek word.
It means perseverance. When a refugee flees from a civil war or natural disaster, they go through a lot of hardships during the journey, and they persevere through the journey.
As a former refugee from Kenya, Malim knows how it feels.
My parents fled from the civil war back in Somalia during the 1990s. I was born in Kenya in a refugee camp when I was 3 years old when we first landed in Texas. I know how to overcome those obstacles in America.
The bracelets are made in the Dream Factory in the Netherlands, where Malim's business partner, also his uncle, employs refugees from all over the world.
This bracelet is not only a fashion piece, but it's a vehicle that supports and helps refugees. We give 50% of profits to nonprofit organizations that support refugees.
Malim sells the bracelets online and through college tours, where he campaigns to raise awareness of the refugee crisis.
We need to understand that when a refugee flees from war, it's not their choice. And when they come to a new country, we need to embrace their culture, you know, the diversity and their talents that they're bringing in.
Hence, the embracelet. Malim plans to expand to other fashion items. For producer June So in Minneapolis, Minnesota, I'm Molly McKitterick, VOA News.
Finally today, a Broadway musical about a woman who may be the last surviving member of Russian royalty is starting its tour around the United States, Europe, Asia, and Latin America. Ironically, one country it won't visit is Russia. Elena Wolf explains why in this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Anastasia, the youngest daughter of Tsar Nicholas II, may have been Russian, but she's been singing up a storm in Spanish, German, and Korean. At least the stage character is. And from there, the Broadway musical Anastasia will continue to be seen in spots around the globe.
From very early on, we discovered that our show had broad international appeal. If you stand in our lobby, you hear people speaking languages from all over the world.
But not in Russian, just yet. The tour of Anastasia will be leaving out its historical homeland for now. It's not politics or linguistics that are a hindrance, but the history of Anastasia and her family that has a deeper and more complex meaning for Russians.
The musical will have to be recoded for the Russian audience, and by that I mean cultural codes that the Russian mentality is based on. We look at our history differently than Americans or Europeans.
Even so, Dmitry Bogachev did want the musical to first play in Moscow. Bogachev is the only Russian producer among more than 700 members of the Broadway League of Producers. Turns out, simplifying the plot and making it more family-friendly led to it becoming a hit first in New York.
Families with small kids and teenagers come to see this musical. They are not as immersed in the context as the Russian audience. You need to explain more about the 1917 revolution, the execution of the Romanov family. You don't need to explain that to the Russian audience. In fact, they would see that as a banality.
And Anastasia isn't just a success with audiences. It was nominated for 2 Tony Awards in 2017, including for Best Actress and Costume Design.
Beautiful musical. The stars are terrific. It has the best projections I've ever seen in a show. It convinces you you're on the river, you're in the forest, you're in snow. It's just gorgeous.
Casting Anastasia in places around the world wasn't as hard as you might think. Many of Anastasia's singers grew up knowing who she was and what she represents.
Anastasia was my role model when I was growing up, and she still is. Many young women find inspiration in her, a strong, independent woman who does everything to pursue her goals and chooses her own path in life.
The musical will be touring the U.S. until the end of November and then come to Europe. When the Grand Duchess will come to Moscow is still unknown. For Elena Wolf in New York, I'm Anna Rice, VOA News.
And I'm Doug Bernardi in Washington. That is VOA Asia for today and this week. Thanks so much for being with us. You can always visit us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us. We hope you'll join us again on Monday. And until then, have a great weekend.